It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Soybean farmers are in a battle for their livelihoods, and much of it surrounds the chemical dicamba.
You know, I can spray dicamba and make a cleaner crop, but I'm not going to do that to my neighbor that's growing a crop that's sensitive. I'm just not going to do that. And you have other people that don't feel that way.
We'll have that story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. In an apparent anticipation of a federal lawsuit seeking recovery of overdue penalties, coal companies owned by the family of West Virginia Governor Jim Justice have filed a lawsuit of their own against federal surface mining regulators. Jesse Wright has more.
According to the lawsuit filed late last week, negotiations between officials from the Department of Interior and the Justice companies to settle unpaid fines abruptly fell apart earlier this month. The Justice companies say they had struck a deal with federal regulators to settle fines from more than 100 violations at Justice Mines dating back to 2017, as well as fines assessed personally against the governor's son, Jay Justice. But in early May, the lawsuit says, the government's attitude toward the Justice companies, quote, noticeably soured. That week, another federal mining agency, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, and the Justice Department filed a lawsuit against almost two dozen Justice coal companies for $4.7 million in delinquent mine safety fees and fines. In a May 15th letter included in the new lawsuit, an official from the Interior Department said the settlement had never been finalized, and he said the Justice Department was now authorized to sue the Justice companies on behalf of the Interior Department. Jay Justice said in a statement that the companies still hope to settle. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jesse Wright.
Synthetic opioids have caused more overdose deaths in the Ohio Valley, as death rates for other substances have fallen. The Washington Post looked into data from the Centers for Disease Control and found the region has the nation's highest rates of death due to fentanyl. Aaron Payne reports.
Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia together had 8 of the 10 counties with the highest annual rate of synthetic opioid deaths between 2013 and 2018, according to the Washington Post analysis of CDC data. Campbell County, West Virginia, had by far the highest rate with nearly 63 deaths per 100,000 people. Washington Post reporters visited many of these counties to learn how locals are handling the epidemic. President Trump has touted his administration's efforts to provide resources and end the crisis. Reporter Sari Horwitz says the administration has taken steps the Obama administration failed to take. But the situation isn't as bright in these communities as the White House says.
When we went to these local communities and we spent quite a bit of time in Ohio, what we're hearing on the ground is they're still not getting enough federal funds and they're not getting the funds fast enough.
Horwitz says local officials are asking for more funds for treatment, law enforcement, child services, and health care, among other needs. The Washington Post article is titled Fighting Fentanyl and is part of a series focusing on the toll the synthetic opioids have taken on the country. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:47. Areas of fog this morning. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Some storms could be severe with gusty wind, highs in the 80s. Chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s, and mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Stewart's Opera House, presenting the Nelsonville Music Festival in Nelsonville, Ohio, June 6th through the 9th, featuring Death Cab for Cutie, Mavis Staples, Tyler Childers, The Breeders, The Wood Brothers, Mandolin Orange, and many more acts on 5 stages over 4 days. Tickets and information at nelsonvillefest.org. As the world waits for a resolution from the Trump administration's trade war with China, it's a tough time to be a farmer, especially a soybean farmer. Soybeans are a $40 billion business in the U.S., but the crop price plummeted last year because of the trade war. Farmers are desperate for anything that can help keep their profits up, like weed killers. For years, farmers have relied on chemicals like Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, but weeds became resistant. Companies developed another weed killer that relies on an herbicide called dicamba, which is quite effective. But dicamba can harm surrounding plants and insects. There have been petitions, lawsuits, and even a death blamed on an argument over dicamba. In the latest episode of WVPB's Us and Them, host Trey Kay and his colleague Loretta Williams traveled to Arkansas to report about a simmering battle pitting farmer against farmer.
Mike McCarty looks exhausted. It's early November, and the fall's been rainy and wet, which has made it hard for him to harvest his crops.
This is where we need to be harvesting. You can tell the beans are laid over. That's not normal looking.
Mike's family farms 13,000 acres of soybeans and rice in northeast Arkansas, along the Mississippi Delta. The terrain is wide and flat. You can see rows and rows of crops all the way to the horizon.
Farmers here grow soybeans for export overseas, where they're used as feed for pigs and chickens. This much rain isn't good for Mike's crops, but it's been great for weeds.
Let me try to find one so I can show you.
As we drive by field after field, Mike points to weeds popping up in and around his soybean rows.
All these are pretty much pigweeds on the end. See the red root there? This is one right here. See?
Pigweed is easy to see sticking up in a soybean field. It's tall and shaped like a feathery Christmas tree. Farmers call it Satan's weed because it grows big and fast, crowding out the crops. Each plant produces hundreds of thousands of seeds. Since the 1970s, farmers use the chemical glyphosate to fight pigweed. Most people know it by its commercial name, Roundup. And farmers use it with another Monsanto product, a genetically modified soybean that's resistant to the herbicide. But over the years, pigweeds become resistant to glyphosate. So farmers were happy when something new came along.
These are soybean plants. Without a weed management program, weeds will compete directly for water, light, and nutrients, robbing these plants of high yields. That's why we created this.
In late 2016, the EPA approved new formulations of a chemical called dicamba to use against pigweed. Several companies, including Monsanto, started manufacturing it. Monsanto also developed a genetically modified soybean that wouldn't be harmed by dicamba.
The following spring, Mike planted Monsanto's new soybean and sprayed one of the new dicamba formulations on his weeds. He was delighted with his harvest.
We cut the best bean crop we ever averaged, 71 bushels. Our previous best was like 62. And we're able to clean our beans up by spraying them. We were weed-free across the whole ranch.
But in the summer of 2017, as farmers like Mike began to use dicamba, some of their neighbors started noticing their crops were getting damaged. The Arkansas Plant Board was flooded with complaints, so they sent investigators out into the fields. The diagnosis? The crinkled leaves were consistent with damage from dicamba.
The board decided to set limits on the use of dicamba. It set a cutoff date, April 15th, for spraying the chemical. This was to protect fruits and vegetables that flower early and can be damaged by the herbicide. But Mike's just getting his soybeans in the ground around then.
Let me make sure I understand. So because of the April 15th cutoff, right, you didn't apply dicamba this past year, no?
Nothing. Had none applied in 18. 17, wall to wall. But in 18, no, we couldn't. I mean, we were locked out, so we applied it all the way up till the cutoff date.
Mike's become a key player in the dicamba debate in Arkansas, and he's rallied more than 300 like-minded farmers to protest that cutoff date.
Hello.
Hey, come on in.
How are you doing?
Good, Mike.
At his home in a wealthy subdivision, we sit at the family's dining room table.
We're at a disadvantage in Arkansas. And I mean, I've got... My pressure starts getting up, really, when I start talking. I mean, it's just...
Mike's got a thick binder of material he's collected to bolster his pro-dicamba position. He points to maps and graphs that show how farmers in other states can spray dicamba more liberally than Arkansas farmers.
You've got Missouri right here to the north, I believe is like June 15th. Tennessee right here, you can spray up until the July the 15th. Mississippi right here, no cutoff period.
Mike wants to be able to get more profitable yields like farmers in those other states, and like he had in 2017.
You know, in 17, when we were blowing and going, we had no idea that that was ever going to be an issue.
Mike says once he and his other pro-dicamba farmers found out that they could hurt other people's crops, they wanted to be able to slow down and use it more carefully.
We're never in a situation where we want to harm our neighbors. We would never do anything to intentionally do that. No farmer I know ever would.
But as much as Mike wants to spray, other farmers, especially those who grow fruits and vegetables, don't want it near them.
I'm Sean Peebles, third generation farmer. We raise vegetables, are one of the larger organic farms in the South.
It's raining, and Sean Peebles can't get any harvesting done today.
Well, what do you think, Alan? It's wet. Yeah, we
went here. So we head over to his office, a repurposed nail factory in central Arkansas.
Sean grows organic crops for large companies like Costco. They use his sweet potatoes for their house brand potato chips. If dicamba got on his organic crops, he'd have to plow them under, unless he could sell them as non-organic for much less money. This could put him out of business.
Look, I don't care what you guys do with dicamba. Just don't get it on me. Okay, that has always been, I don't think it should be here, but I can't stop it. But you stay away from me, because if you get on me and I can't sell my product and I go out of business and I don't have anything left to live for and I'm going to lose my house and I'm going to lose every acre that I owned or my grandfather owned, you're fixing to see a whole new side of me. And that's what happened to Mike Wallace.
The guy he mentioned, Mike Wallace, was a farmer who suspected that dicamba had damaged his crops. He got into a confrontation with a worker from a neighboring farm about it. They got into a scuffle, and Wallace was shot and killed. This was in 2016. Thankfully, there aren't any other examples of this kind of violence, but Wallace's death cast a shadow over the whole dicamba debate in Arkansas. It's made it hard for farmers to talk about their differences over whether or not to use the weed killer.
David Wilde knew Mike Wallace and was troubled by his death. Wilde and his sons grow soybeans as well as cotton and peanuts in northeast Arkansas. Workers fix a peanut reaping machine as Wilde walks me around the area. He tells me his family has been farming for five generations, and it bothers him to see how folks seem to be choosing themselves over their neighbors.
Because economics is driving it rather than the morals that we tried to teach our children, that right's right and wrong's wrong.
But since there's so much in this business that is beyond your control, isn't really what we're seeing is that people are trying to control what they can?
Certainly. Yes, that's true. That's true. But even though, I could spray dicamba and make a cleaner crop more economically and cheaper, but I'm not going to do that to my neighbor that's growing a crop that's sensitive. I'm just not going to do that. And you have other people that don't feel that way, that they're more, I'm out looking out for me and me only.
Wilde says his own soybean crop was damaged by dicamba in 2017. He's suing Monsanto.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the Us and Them episode, Farm Wars. To hear the entire episode, tune into West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 and again Saturday at 3 p.m. And of course, you can download the Us and Them podcast from iTunes, Stitcher, NPR One, or Radio Public. You can also listen online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.